Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy, recording at 12:59 PM. That is Pacific Standard Time. Today is November 22nd, and I thought that it's been a few days since we looked at the volatility index, but it has pulled all the way back to below 10 again. And when we look at that on that weekly basis, we can see clearly that every time that it has had one of these mini spikes over the course of 2017, that it has moved to and subsequently moved to a new low, or at least moved back towards a level below 10. So we're right back there again now. And we've also seen that, particularly since about May, that it has tended to bob along around the 10 level. Now, eventually, this declining pattern is going to break out, but there's no sign of it yet. And that's an important characteristic of this market. There has been a distinct lack of volatility. So we have to think about that in terms of what's been happening in markets. The S&P 500, for example, got right up and tested that 2600 level yesterday, and it was just off it in here today. But what is perhaps more important is the fact that reactions over the last year have been very modest, and they've been actually smaller than what we thought was a very consistent period of time between 2013 and 2015. So the imbalance between supply and demand has increased. That means that there is more people buying, there are less people selling, but who are the buyers? Well, the buyers are quantitative strategies, the buyers are risk parity strategies, and ETF buyers. And all of those strategies are earnings agnostic. They're not buying because of any particular sense of value, but rather they are various iterations of what many would refer to as a momentum trade. And that is helping to sustain these markets on the upside. It was, by and large, a quiet day. The majority of indices were down, but certainly not in a dynamic manner. Where we are beginning to see some action is in bonds, where the two-year yield is continuing to march higher. And because the Federal Reserve is pretty much due to raise rates again in December, the two-year yield is finally beginning to respond to that risk, and it is now up to almost 1.8%. So it is now pricing in the possibility of two additional rate hikes within the next 24 months. And of course, one of them is going to happen in December. So then the likelihood is that it's going to continue to price in these potential for additional rate hikes. Now, very simply, when we look at that at the 2 year, we should also take a look at that 10 year, because when you get an inverted yield curve, which is the spread between the two, then what you're really looking at is one of the most reliable lead indicators for future recessions. And that spread is contracting, and it's contracting rather rapidly at the present moment. So it is now down to 58 basis points. That has been a declining trend since 2014. And when we look at it on this long-term basis, we can see that it spent an awful lot of time in that region of about 250 basis points, which represented a very lengthy period of stimulus for the economy. But it is now being rapidly unwound. And with the prospect of interest rate hikes, the bond market is beginning to consider what that is going to look like for the economy. And they're probably not coming up with a great deal of good news for bond investors, because if we are going to get additional rate hikes and interest rates are gradually pushed higher, there are going to be two potential outcomes, and they could potentially happen concurrently. One, of course, is that interest rates are going up because inflationary pressures are beginning to rise. And those inflationary pressures are rising because we have record low unemployment, and the prospect of even lower unemployment next year is going to increase the potential for more people to come back into the labor market, but also to push wages up. And that is directly inflationary. There's no There's no question about that. But then, of course, you also have this big question: what's going to happen in terms of the refinancing costs of highly leveraged companies that have been taking out loans willy-nilly over the last decade because interest rates have been so remarkably low and credit incredibly abundant? So that's certainly something that a lot of people are going to be paying close attention to, and that is also why I think I'm going to continue to keep highlighting this high yield spreads chart. And let me just take off the spread with the 2 year and put that back on a line basis. We can see that it has rallied over the balance of the last 3 weeks to come back up and test the upper side of its range, but it's not breaking out. That's perhaps the most important point. And when we look at the junk bond ETFs, they did pull back really quite sharply in the early part of November, but they have been rebounding over the last week and now are approaching the region of the trend mean. This is really rather an important psychological Rubicon, and if they can sustain a move back above that, or if this one in particular can sustain a move back above 37, well then that would begin to, I think, I think it gives some credibility to the fact that this has been a squall. But there is no denying that there's been a loss of momentum. And perhaps an even bigger question is, if it gets above 37, how much further will it be able to go in a rising yield environment? This is a rather large question. Something that nobody has talked about for at least a decade is convexity, which is the sensitivity of prices to interest rates. And we haven't had to talk about it because there haven't been any interest rates, but that's changing. And the Bank of Japan is beginning to talk about what an exit might begin to look like. And that's a big question because, with the Federal Reserve beginning to remove some of the stimulus and the ECB moving towards a tapering, then the onus for additional monetary accommodation falls pretty squarely onto Japan and China. And the Japanese are beginning to talk about what they might begin to do when they eventually decide to withdraw some of the stimulus. When we look at the yen, it has pulled back. Well, the dollar has pulled back to the region of the trend mean. This is a rather big level here. And of course, if the dollar can sustain a move above 115, well, then that would signal a return to demand dominance. The Nikkei future is down about 100 points in trading at the moment, but perhaps much more important than that is the fact that the topic second section has continued to rebound. It's paused at big round numbers previously, and it has done so just recently at 7,000. As long as it remains in a reasonably consistent advance, then I think we can continue to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside for Japan. And it has been my contention that Japan is potentially one of the better places that we might find a hedge against developing inflationary pressures. And the very fact that it is moving back to a position of outperformance is a testament to that contention that inflationary pressures are beginning to rise. And against that background, I think people are beginning to look at gold once more. Gold was up about $10 today. It has been up one day and down the next for most of the month, and it was up about $10 in here today, so coming back up towards this $1,290 area. And if it can clear the $1,300, well, then that is likely that's going to break this progression of lower rally highs since early September and raise the potential that we could get it back up towards that $1,360 area. But more important than that is, when we look at this medium-term trend, the most important thing it's done was that massive reaction against the prevailing downtrend in 2016. And now we're getting the period of right-hand extension. That's a type 2 bottom with right-hand extension, as we talk about at the chart seminar. It's almost the rule rather than the exception that you get one of these volatile trading ranges after a type 2 bottom, because you get this massive reaction, and then people are so surprised by it, they're asking, well, what has really changed? Of course, what's changed is that all the people who were incredibly bearish and leveraged have been stopped out. And they are a little bit slower to put on those big short positions once more. We also know that the marginal cost of production has declined pretty significantly over much of the last 3 years. Back in 2015, people were talking about being profitable in the region of $1,200 or even $1,300, and now it's much closer to between about $650 and $850, depending on the miner. And what that suggests is that the mining sector is now capable of offering leverage to the gold price, provided gold prices obviously I guess the more important point in terms of the leverage is that they don't embark on these incredibly ambitious investment projects. But if with the all-in cost now really leading in terms of all of their quarterly statements, I think the mining sector has got new religion in terms of free cash flow. And that was one of the real big problems that they had, was that they had lots of earnings but no free cash flow because they were investing so heavily in additional supply. Well, if gold prices can break above $1,300, then the gold miners, which have done nothing for almost a month already. This is a weekly chart, and they've done absolutely nothing at all for the last 4 weeks. Well, what that suggests is that when this range is eventually resolved, and if it can sustain a move above 190, well, then that will raise the potential for a move back up towards the upper side of this range. And even then, when we think about where we are in the context of this very inert range, that the peak back in 2016 was much closer to 300. So then if we do get a return to demand dominance, then it would really suggest that 220 would be for starters. But that's on the assumption that gold will in fact rally from these levels. Personally, I bought a little bit of silver in here today. I think that it has steadied in the region of the trend mean, and this range between 18 and 16 is, and we're pretty much right in the middle of it, that the more likely scenario is that we're going to go back up and at least test the upper side and potentially break out at some stage. But I think I want to start to increase my exposure to the precious metals, because there is a certain amount of uncertainty coming out on the inflation front, and indeed in the interest rate front, and they haven't been doing anything for almost 2 years already. So then that's not likely to persist indefinitely. And if we look at silver, in fact, it has been in a base formation since late 2014. And rather inert at that for something that is incredibly inert, excuse me, incredibly volatile by its nature. So I do think that precious metals are getting a bit more interesting. And of course, so is oil. Brent crude prices continue to hold this move above $60, and certainly they've been consolidating over the last 3 weeks, but it has so far held the breakout. And as long as that remains the case, we can give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. So that is generally positive for the oil and gas producers. And the FTSE 350 oil and gas index is right in the region of the upper side of a very lengthy range. And of course, it is rather dominated by Royal Dutch Shell. But I think the fact that it is has been ranging since 2007 in an incredibly volatile manner, and that it did race to get up here, suggests that we are going to get a little bit of consolidation. But if oil prices can sustain the move above $60, that is really quite good news for just about everything in the energy sector. But most particularly, those kinds of companies that do better in a higher price environment. And there are a substantial number of those. So you have Sasol in South Africa, you have Suncor in Canada, you have a number of the shale drillers in Texas, you have the offshore companies in Brazil. They all represent additional sources of supply that become economic at somewhat higher levels. So Southwest Energy has been ranging mostly between 5 and 6, but it is holding above 6 so far. And if it can break up out of this base, well, then it has some recovery potential, since it does offer quite a lot of leverage to higher oil prices in much the same manner that some of those gold miners do. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.